everyone, and welcome to Minute 76 of Season 8 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning classic Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Rebecca Dennison of Taking Up Room and Taking Up More Room. So, welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rob. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad that I was able to get you to join in this season. You know, I know that you're a fan of World War II movies, or the history of World War II and things like that. So I thought you'd be a perfect person to have on for this season. So actually, what is your background with World War II? Like, why is it the movies? Is it the history? What is it that makes you so fond of that time period, I guess you can say?
Well, my dad, it's mainly because of my parents. My parents were born, my mom was born in 1941 in November of that year. My dad was born in March of 42. So this is a time period that they were very familiar with, even though they were really young when the war ended. My adoptive grandpa was at the Battle of Midway. He was radioman on a PBY in the reconnaissance, one of the reconnaissance fleets. And so my dad also watches a lot of war movies. This is something that he has always done my entire life. So all of my life, I've heard about the war in one way or another. And I don't know, I just, I guess as I grew up, I just found things that I was interested in and wanted to follow up on and kind of study on my own versus what I'd heard from my family. I just wanted to expand on. And so I started studying about the war, the home front of the war, you know, the rationing and what it was like for people to wait for their loved ones to come home and to hear from them and what just the day-to-day existence must have been like. And so I've got collections of magazines. I've got radio shows from that time. It's just basically just whatever I could find, I've been trying to absorb about that time. I mean, I'm not an expert, but it's like everything I find, I want to find more. So it's one of those ongoing quests, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. Wow.
Yeah, and it's just something like, I feel like it helps me get to know my family better and our history better because we're still, you know, we're still affected. My parents both lived in Southern California during the war. My mom was in Imperial Valley, which was one of the most fortified areas of the country during the war. And my grandpa was a farmer and he was in a protected occupation, so he never got drafted. Plus, he was 31, so he was too old anyway. My dad lived in San Diego, which obviously big naval presence. And then they moved up to the Bay Area. Both my parents moved up to the Bay Area after the war was over. So, you know, it's just something that I've just always heard about in one way or another. And it's a very, very interesting time. I think it's such a sea change in history in so many ways. So it's intriguing.
Wow.
Sorry.
That is so cool.
I went on there.
No, that's great. Isn't that why we're here? We're here to talk about these things. Yeah. So that's perfectly okay. There's, you know, we don't have a time limit.
Good.
Great. You know, we talk as much as we need to about the movie and things around it. So, yeah. You know, you're all good. Don't worry.
Okay.
Never worry about that. You know, that is not an issue. we've had episodes that have gone over an hour. So, wow. You know, we're good.
Okay.
We're good. And okay, so at this point, then why don't you explain your history with this movie?
Well, actually, I've only up till recently, I only have seen past, you know, the point past the first 30 minutes of the movie. My husband told me not to watch the first 30 minutes. He said, it's too gory. It's too bloody. You won't like it. You know, that kind of thing. So I was always kind of a little nervous about it, even though I heard it was very, very accurate. But I just thought that, you know.
Wait, he told you not to watch anything besides that first first half hour?
He said start at 30 minutes in because you won't like the first 30
minutes.
Ah,
okay.
It's too violent and gory and all that stuff.
Okay, no, I misunderstood. Sorry. I thought you meant that he only wanted you to watch the first 30 minutes.
Yeah, no.
And I'm like, okay,
no.
That is
no.
The bulk of the gore of this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then when you asked me to do this broadcast or this podcast, I was just like, huh, I guess I'll have to watch the first 30 minutes now. So I did it, and it was what I was expecting, but it wasn't as bad as I thought. I mean, there were some parts of it I kind of looked away just because, you know, nobody wants to see people go through what they went through. But it was like, wow, this is some powerful stuff right here. And it's very, very impressive. And he really gets the confusion of that invasion down, Spielberg does. They really translate that really, really well to the screen. That's one of the really awe-inspiring things about that first 30 minutes. So it's like, huh,
yeah,
it's not so bad.
So this was the first time you saw that first 30 minutes?
Yeah. And then, but the rest of it, I'd
seen
a couple of times. So it's sort of a funny angle to come to a movie from.
Right. Okay. And so my assumption is that your husband is not very upset at me.
No. No.
For forcing you to watch this.
Yeah, no, I mean, he wasn't forcing me to skip it or anything. He just was kind of like, you're not going to like it. So just, you may not want to watch it. So it was kind of like just a heads up type of thing. And yeah, and this, but he knows now, because I've been doing the Substack reviews, I've been going to more horror movies and stuff. So I think I've kind of steeled myself a little bit. Plus I've taken, as part of my job, I've also been a CPR and AED certified. So I've had to take first aid. And so that means I've had to watch some things that I wouldn't have ordinarily sought out, like, you know, how to apply a tourniquet and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, so things have changed since he told me to skip the first 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did he rewatch it with you now when you were watching it, just to make sure that you were okay?
No. I think he was just kind of like, you'll be fine. Just flip down when you need to.
Okay.
But my son was out here with me out in the living room watching it. And I mean, he was a teenager. He wasn't like taking in every single second of it. He was also playing video games at the time. So I wasn't too worried about him. Plus he plays, you know, World of Warcraft and all those, you know, more violent stuff. So, and he's a boy.
Ah, okay.
He was fine.
It's good to know. The point of this podcast is not to traumatize people. You know,
Yeah, enough. No. No, we're good. We're totally good.
Exactly. All right. Excellent. Yeah. So minute 76 begins with Mellish showing off his star and ends with DeWitt trying to explain what happened.
Yes.
So we ended things on Friday with, the men standing around this area where all these hundreds of soldiers have now passed through. And we discussed a little bit about that last week, about what's the possible reason that there are so many soldiers at this particular point or anything like that. But, we saw the helicopter and, we saw the airplane, the glider that was sitting there, but there wasn't really that much of an explanation. And the minute ended on Friday with Mellish standing there, sort of taunting the German prisoners that were walking by. And this minute opens up with continuing with that, where basically Mellish goes, "I'm Juden, you know?" Mm-hmm. And he started taking out his dog tags on Friday, and today we actually get to see that on his dog tags, he has it looks to me as if maybe it was a necklace or something like that, that has a Star of David on it. Stuff like that.
Probably.
Once again, showing his religion, showing that he's a Jew. This is also Steven Spielberg's way of showing it also, that here we have a Jew in the middle of the war who knows how much the Germans hate the Jewish people and wants to show them, that he's not afraid, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So what do you know about the Star of David? Do you know anything about it?
Well, I know that it's obviously the six-pointed star that we've all seen. I heard that one of the reasons that it's a symbol of Judaism is that it was the shape of the shield that David carried into battle.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
It's one of the explanations that I've heard of
it. Yes. I mean, it's in Hebrew, it's called Magen David. So it's the Magen is the shield. So it's the shield of David. And that's exactly what it is. That's the symbol that was on his shield, and that's the shape of it also.
Okay.
Wow. Right. It's a hexagram, and basically is two triangles transposed one on the other. Sometimes it's one on top of the other. Sometimes it looks like one is going through the other with the connection and stuff like that. I mean, the symbol goes back quite far. I mean, if it's connected to King David lived 3,000 years ago, so it You know, that has basically been the symbol for Judaism ever since then. And obviously during World War II, that was what the Germans did. They made the Jews walk around with yellow stars on them. You know, and
Yes.
that has always been the way of differentiate between someone who is a Jew and someone who is not. You find it in many synagogues. There are a lot of old Jewish communities that you will find, Stars of David all around that would also show that certain houses were Jewish or certain buildings were Jewish and things like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, Melish wants to show everyone that it's important to him that they know where his roots are.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we got a little bit of that. It was probably a few months ago already. You know, when they finished the original assault. You know, the way that he was commiserating of the fact that when he found the Hitler Youth knife, that now he's going to use it for special Jewish symbolism and stuff like that.
Yes.
So Mellish, we get Mellish doing that for just a few seconds, and then we're back to DeWitt trying to explain to both Mike and Miller what actually happened. And he goes, "Yeah, I couldn't pry him out of there. Hard as I tried, I'll need a winch." Yeah, and Horvath then leans in and starts looking, and we see a Jeep. That was basically totaled, and we then see a helmet on a soldier that's in the Jeep, and we see that it has a star on it, and Horvath goes, "That's stars." And then what DeWitt then says is, he goes, "Yeah, Brigadier General Ahmed, Deputy Commander 101st." So it always made me wonder, watching this movie, is there really first of all, did this really happen? Did the deputy commander of the 101st get killed? And was his name Ammond? Do you know if that is true or not? What do you think?
That's a good question. I wouldn't put it past the movie because it's just like, you know how it goes. If a story, the stranger a story is, the more likely it is to be true. I don't know. I couldn't really find anything on him, so it's hard to say if it was real or not, but something like that could have possibly happened.
Okay, so it did. First of all, they I guess they changed the name, but it's funny that they would change the name if this is based on, one of the things that we've mentioned many times is when we're talking about this movie is the fact that they weave history and truth into the fictional story that they've created here. So to me, it doesn't make sense that they would then change the name of the guy that this actually happened to, because you can easily do a search now. Even in 1998, when this came out, you could do, I don't know if you could do a Google search. I think Google was around still in 98, or you can do an Ask Jeeves search
Yahoo.
back then, and find that information. I mean, there was a brigadier general, okay, who was the deputy commander of the 101st Airborne, whose name was Don Forrester Pratt. He was born on July 12th, 1892, and he died on June 6th, 1944. He was actually the highest ranking Allied officer that was killed on D-Day. And basically what happened was is that he was originally assigned to command the division and train and reserve troops of the 101st who were coming in by sea. And then he got special permission to join the gliders that were the first assault during the invasion. So he was actually a passenger on one of these gliders along with his aide, First Lieutenant Lee John May, and they were in the very first glider that went in. And what the name of that fight the glider was the Fighting Falcon. And basically, what happened was that it was piloted by Lieutenant Colonel Mike Murphy, who was the senior glider pilot of the command, and the co-pilot's name was Second Lieutenant John M. Butler. And when it landed in the designated landing zone, which was 2 miles west of the beach itself, they landed there between 3:45 and 4 a.m. on June 6th. The problem was is they landed successfully, but the because the grass was very wet, didn't slow down, and it overran the landing zone, and it crashed into a line of 40-foot trees
Oh, my
that
word.
were there. And now Lieutenant Colonel Murphy, the pilot, suffered injuries. He broke both of his legs and had a compound fracture. And the co-pilot was killed because he was impaled by a tree limb. So again, we're talking a little bit about what DeWitt's going to talk about, but in a second we'll hear how true the movie is to what really happened. And Pratt was actually sitting in his Jeep, and he ended up getting killed from a fracture to his cervical of his spine. And basically he got whiplash. That's what killed him. The Jeep itself wasn't chained or tied down, and it didn't break loose, but because of the way that they impacted, he died of whiplash. And his Lieutenant May, who was riding next to him, got out with minor injuries from the whole thing.
Oh, wow. Oh,
Yeah.
that's
And
crazy.
in the end they first buried Pratt in his parachute in Normandy until the end of the war, and then he was later reinterred in 1948 in Arlington.
Wow.
And the officer who the new general who replaced him, his name was Gerald Higgins, who was the youngest officer in ground forces during World War II.
Wow. No pressure.
Exactly. So basically DeWitt then explains what happened. He goes, Brigadier General Ammend, Deputy Commander 101st, some f***ing genius had the great idea of welding a couple of steel plates onto our deck to keep the general safe from ground fire. Unfortunately, they forgot to tell me about it until we were getting airborne. Well, that's like trying to fly a freight train, okay?
Yes. Oh, my word. Those gliders are so
Seriously, gross
lightweight.
overload. Trim characteristics all shot to hell.
Yes.
I nearly broke both my arms trying to
That's
keep her level.
ridiculous.
And when we released,
Oh, my.
I as hard as I could, tried to gain some altitude and still keep her from stalling. We came down like a f***ing meteor, and this is how we ended up. And the others, they stopped easy enough, okay, though. So, again, this is the way that DeWitt wants to explain. You can see the way that the character who plays him, Leland Orson. Right, you see the way that Leland Orson plays this. You can see this guy is already dealing with PTSD from this crash. From the fact, presumably, because here you have a pilot who, we'll find out tomorrow what happened to other people that were on the plane and stuff like that. But he's taking it pretty seriously. This isn't what he expected to happen. He was hoping that things would be a little bit easier, I guess, on them for during the during their landing, stuff like that. But nope, it wasn't.
That is just, Oh my gosh.
And I love the way that he when he's telling the story, he like stammers a little bit to once again show us, possibly the way that he is personally affected by everything that he's telling. It's not just an actor reading off a line. It's he does it with a lot more emotion, basically, which you can see trepidation in his voice, that because he's trying to, in some ways, also trying to justify that, hey, it wasn't my fault. I did all I could.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene was a gut puncher. I mean, I heard it and I just was like, ugh. I mean, it's such a kick to the ribs because, I mean, I keep talking about my dad, but my dad is a single engine pilot. And so that's another thing. I've been around planes and heard about planes my entire life. And so I've heard about a lot of the mechanics of it and the physics of planes and gliders and that kind of thing. So when I heard that he had weight added to his plane and nobody told him, I was like, oh, that's horrible. That's like the worst thing you could do to the pilot is not tell him that his plane's been modified.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And again, it got, based on what I just read, it doesn't mention anything about the fact that they added metal plates in real life, but still.
Yeah. Really hope not.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Seriously.
Is your yeah. father a fan of Saving Private Ryan?
I'm sure he's seen it probably more than once. I mean, he's seen tons and tons of war movies. So I'll have to ask him, but I'm pretty sure he has. I'm pretty sure my mom probably wouldn't watch it with him. She doesn't. I know she doesn't like the movies, so I'm guessing he's probably seen it at least once.
Wait, she doesn't like these type of movies, or she doesn't like watching movies?
Well, she doesn't like Saving Private Ryan. I told her I would be doing this podcast, and I told her what movie it was, and she said, "Oh, yuck." So she's apparently seen it at least once.
Okay. You know, not everyone has to like the movie. Yeah, and again, the people, most of the people who don't like the movie is because they don't like it because it's so realistic. So, you know, that says something also.
Yeah, it's so really realistic. Oh my gosh.
You know, so I like the way, you know, that's the thing. It's one of those movies where I don't think there are that many people that will say this is a terrible movie. It's just a question of whether it fits their taste or not. Yeah, I think that's mm-hmm. more yeah. along the line of of how people look at these things.
Yes, it's mm-hmm. so heavy.
Yeah.
So it just depends.
That's right. Heavy. Is there something?
Yep.
Is there something wrong with the Earth's gravitational pull in the future?
That's right. Oh my gosh! I knew that was coming.
Well, come on, we have to quote other movies too if we can. You know, why not?
That's right. Gotta lighten things
exactly.
up somehow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's that word heavy again. There you go. There you go.
Oh, wait. Okay. This
it could
be,
be.
A thing.
It could be. It could be. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically all we have for this minute. Is there anything else that that you wanted to add that we might have missed while we're talking about this?
I think we pretty much covered everything. I mean, just the thing that I found amazing about it was the fact that he held it together as much as he did talking about it, because you could tell, you could hear the guilt in his voice and all of the emotion that came with it. The fact that he survived and, you know, things went so badly. It's just amazing piece
yeah.
of acting right there. And just that little teeny space of a minute.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, again, as, yeah. You know, we're going to get him a little more during the rest of the week also, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
No, my assumption is that anyone who's listening to this has probably seen the movie. That's
yes,
my you know, I think I can go on a limb and state that. I could be wrong. There could be some people who are watching the movie for the very first time, minute by minute, you know, as we're talking about it, and that's fine. I think that's very courageous of them.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Great. Excellent. So every Monday, we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams movie soundtracks, movie themes, movie scores, however you want to look at that from that perspective. So, Rebecca, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. Well, I would say to start with, I'd probably say Jurassic Park would be my number five. It's a really, really tough choice because there's so much variety to John Williams. But yeah, I would start with Jurassic Park just because it doesn't seem like the kind of music that you would hear in a movie like that. But it's just so, so cool. I heard the Auburn Symphony play it one year at a summer concert that they did. And it's just like, just getting to focus on the music, it was It was awesome. It's just so good. All right. Number four, I put Catch Me If You Can. There's another example of John Williams doing something called repertoire. And I mean, in that movie, he goes a little jazzy. And I think it kind of harkens back to his early days when he was Johnny Williams. Now he's getting back to those roots of his.
Have you seen his the documentary that came out last month, Music by John Williams?
No, I've been waiting to see that. That looks really good.
I strongly recommend it. It was amazing.
Yeah, I'll have to look for that. Yep. And then number three, I put Jaws, because that's just so iconic. I mean, anybody, you know, anywhere could start, you know, singing, and it's so ubiquitous to our culture. Mm-hmm. And not just for fake looking sharks. So yeah, that's number three. And then number two, I put the Indiana Jones theme.
From Raiders, right?
Because again, well, pretty much any of them, but yeah, Raiders, right. Obviously the OG, mm-hmm. Indiana Jones. So I think we go with that one. But yeah, just another example of his wide variety of musical styles. You've got the Heroes theme, you know, very reminiscent of the 1930s and iconic in its own way. And then number one, this is sort of a cliche, but I put Star Wars.
It's not a cliche. I mean, again, we're talking about John Williams. How can that be a cliche?
Yes. It's like everybody says Star Wars. It feels like that's the...
Not that's everybody the has said everybody. Star Wars, but... but again... But yeah. So you are the eighth person to talk about Star Wars, and you are the... Trying to remember what week we're on right now. And you are the 16th person. So only half the people have talked about it, have mentioned it. So there you go.
Oh, okay. I'm playing catch up on your podcast. So I haven't heard that far yet. I'll be interested to hear the rest of them. So yeah. And then I did put an honorable mention in here. I put Harry Potter, and it was really, really tough to leave this one off of the list, because it's just, it's such a cute little theme. It's so fanciful. It's like something you hear out of music box.
Yeah. No, it's great. You see, I always love the little bit of trivia that they took some of the themes of Harry Potter and used them in Revenge of the Sith, you know, at the point. Yeah. At the point where Obi-Wan is giving Luke, sorry. That's really bad. When Obi-Wan is giving Luke over to the Lars family. So they put in a few notes there of the Harry Potter.
Oh my word. I'll have to go back and look for that.
It's pretty much the last scene of the yeah. movie. But yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and look for that now. That's wild. Thank you.
That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So Rebecca, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
Okay. I'm at takinguproom.com is the address of my blog. And then RebeccaDenniston.substack.com is the address of my Substack page. And then on social media, I'm on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Instagram. Those are all taking up room, so I'm pretty easy to find.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you feel like it's sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude, you haunt me with reveries of days gone.